Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to do a mailbag, grab bag kind of thing, but I will address for you right now one of the most common questions people post in the comment sections below my videos. I get about almost once a day, either a comment or an email where someone will say, Steve, can you explain to me why you look down and turn your head up before a video starts? And I've actually, as a joke, occasionally done this, but there actually is something going on over here. And what's going on, of course, is that I have a digital recorder down here. So I record the show for the podcast that is on iTunes, but it also feeds the camera. But it comes from this microphone. There's a cord down here that runs to the recorder, and then from the recorder, it runs up to the camera. And in the past, a long, long time ago, I screwed up before where I forgot to hit record on this recorder. Occasionally, you see me look down and panic. It's like, okay, good. Well, the way I taught myself to always make sure it's hit is that I literally do everything, sit down, and the last thing I do is hit record. And then I look up, hey, how you doing? Welcome to Leto's Law. Now, could I hit record, look at the camera during the headlights, and then start recording? Yeah, I probably could. But, you know, routines are ways that I make myself comfortable and try to avoid screwing things up. So bear with me. Now, to the mailbag. I got a bunch of stuff in the mail recently, and I also got a bunch of stuff through the email. I'm going to cover a couple stories here that I think are important, including this shirt. I wore this shirt a couple videos back, and I mentioned that it's associated with roadkill, but I didn't quite get the full story in, so I want to make sure this is very, very clear. Alan sent me the shirt, and he says, Steve, I've been a subscriber to your YouTube channel for a while. I love the videos. Almost always learn something from them, and as a token of my appreciation, I'm sending you the dog shirt from David Freiberger's shop. And Freiberger is the former editor of Hot Rod Magazine and a co-host on Roadkill, which is a show on Motor Trend. And he likes old Mopars and dogs, which makes him, per se, a good person. The dog portrayed on the t-shirt accompanied the Roadkill guys in many adventures. Unfortunately, she passed away some time ago, and the shirt commemorates her. 50% of the proceeds from sales of the shirt, which was offered for 1 week only, so this is like limited edition, benefits the Dalton Milliken Fund, which helps spay-neuter dogs of low-income people. The late Dalton Milliken was the son of NHRA top fuel racer Clay Milliken. And there's a website link here. So I'm going to post that link in the description to this video. It sounds like a great cause. Sounds like a bunch of great people. And of course, Alan, thank you for sending it along. Now, other things I've gotten in the mail recently, I mentioned that I got the mug from JB from Oz, who is a maker of things, and he's got his own channel on YouTube. He also included a funny story, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, it happens, but he mentions that there's a sewing machine that was in his family, and his grandmother purchased the sewing machine in 1979. She loved the machine and used it often, making all kinds of things for my sister, my parents, and she also did charity work with it. And so when the grandmother passed away about 20 years ago, the mom took over the machine. And she also put many miles on the machine, sewing up yacht club pennants and so on for a business. Eventually, she replaced the machine with a different one, and so the machine got passed to the sister of the gentleman on the mug. She used the machine also and was using it to make products for her Etsy shop. And finally, the machine ceased functioning in 2009. Now, we could do the math on this, but we're busy people. So here's the deal. The machine had a warranty on its motor for 2 years, but the machine had a warranty for 30 years, okay? And here's the thing. It died 1 month outside the 30-year warranty, which makes you wonder about these things. But he wanted to point out just the unusual aspect of all of this because he said that if they had wanted to file a claim, if they could have filed a claim, if the machine had broken down, like, say, a year earlier, he said that according to the warranty from the manufacturer, they would have needed to have a copy of the receipt. They'd have to attach that to the warranty certificate. The warranty and the machine would have to have been sold by an authorized dealer, and you had to have that information. And then the company itself that gave you the warranty would have to exist. And then, of course, the fine print states this only applies to the first buyer. And he's suggesting that in Australia, the first buyer would probably have been his grandmother, who had been passed away for about a decade. So it's one of those things, and I've joked with people before. They say, yeah, you know, I got a lifetime warranty on this. And I said, oh, I hope you outlive the company. Because, you know, there was a time when we would have thought, oh, you know, Sears will be around forever. Certainly, if not Kmart. So, but it's an interesting story, but I'm glad he passed it along. I love the story. I actually did once represent an owner who'd bought a defective sewing machine, if for no other reason than just to be able to say, I once represented somebody who bought a Lemon sewing machine. But another story for another day. Then I got a really nice card, and I was trying to open up the card, and I realized there was something inside that was unusual. So I was very careful in opening it up. So it's really, really cool. This is really cool. It's a store-bought card. Part of it is. And he says, Dear Steve, I've been watching your videos now for almost 6 months, so I wanted to say both how much I enjoy your oratory and your brand of humor. Your story on your neighbor who kept mowing over the strange green lawn stakes had me laughing so much I had to pull over. Now, here's the cool thing. I'm a 23-year-old Bermudian who rolled the dice and started university here in Laramie, Wyoming. I assume that means he's from Bermuda. And so from Bermuda to Wyoming is beyond culture shock. That's like climate shock. I am studying music. I specialize in big band of the 30s and 40s and jazz, and I could not be happier, though adapting to Wyoming winters from island life has proved difficult, as you might imagine. Now, here's what he says. A big part of why I chose the States was for the car culture. And one of the first things I did was purchase a 1963 Cadillac Series 6200, which is the model below the DeVille. This was also my first car. I daily drive it to this day. Your stories and knowledge on this and motoring reminds me of why I am a car guy. It has become a tradition of mine to listen to you when I take my long road trips. So I'm going to be listening a lot to you as I take my third road trip this week to the California desert. I get quite a bit of anger, though, directed at me for daily driving my Cadillac. And the various car collector circles and enthusiasts say I am beating up a survivor by driving it. I'd be curious to know your thoughts on this. Should these mint classics be enjoyed or protected and kept safe? Many thanks and warm regards, Dylan. Now, here's the funny thing. On that issue, if it's your car, do with it as you wish. But you know something? There is something to be said for the fact that if it's a daily driver, and it's not like a museum piece, meaning it's, you know, if it was the last one on Earth, maybe you put it in a museum. But if there's other ones out there, drive it and enjoy it. And when other people criticize you, how you deal with your own stuff, there's things we call those people, but most of them aren't good. So, you know something, my friend Jay Leno has got a huge car collection. All of his cars are plated and he drives them. And they all run. That's the point of it. And, you know, you could turn his garage at the flip of a switch into a museum. You could just simply leave the cars parked one day and go, oh, that's a museum now. But look what we lose. You know, Jay shoots the videos. He's out driving around in a steam car or a turbine car or, heaven forbid, a gasoline-powered car. And you look at it and go, that's what these cars are built for. They're built to be driven. So your Cadillac was built to be driven. Good friend of mine, it's kind of funny, this reminds me of this, is my good friend Marku from Finland, came to America, got a couple college degrees here, including, I believe, a master's in automotive engineering, and now works for one of the big three car companies. The first thing he did when he got here is he bought himself a huge American car. People come here from other countries, not just to buy cars, but to buy big cars. And he got himself a big old Lincoln, I believe a Continental, and it weighs like, you know, 75,000 pounds, and, you know, it's like an aircraft carrier. And then he just recently bought himself an older T-Bird that he's also working on getting on the road. And same thing. I said, why'd you buy that? He's like, come to America, you buy a big American car. That's what you do. Can't fault you for that. And he drives the cars. That's the whole point. So one thing I should point out to you, that back to my friend Dylan, who passed along the story about the Cadillac, he sent me a photograph of the Cadillac, I'm guessing out in Wyoming. And if I can scan this, I'll scan this and put that in there. I hope you won't mind. It's a beautiful car and it's a beautiful scene. And that car should be driven, okay? But then he also included two other things. And this is what makes it so cool. He sent me a photograph of himself sitting on the hood of his car. with a note. And he said, your video on your old Charger reminded me that it's important to get a picture with your car. And he goes, this is me and Ernest, the 63 Cadillac. So he's named his car Ernest. And he's sitting on the car. And I'm telling you, I got a bunch of photos of my car. Not a single one with me in it, because I didn't think at the time, hey, someday that'll be a thing. A selfie. Who'd have thought? And finally, and this is cool, and this will go in the background, and I'm going to mount this back there. Somehow you can see it. But he included a quarter. It's an American 25-cent piece, and it's called a quarter. It's a quarter dollar. It's the value. And many people will tell you that some of the things that you can do with coins, it's not uncommon that I use a dime to adjust some things depending on the size of the screw, but you can use a quarter on a larger screw or bolt. And he wrote, Steve, this 1965 quarter was used by both the original owner for 47 years and by me to adjust the carburetor mixture and idle speed in the Cadillac. It fits perfectly in the large flathead screw adjuster. It's clipped to the air cleaner within the engine bay all this time. I thought it might be a nice addition for your famed $100 bill, or a companion for your $100 bill. So I'm not giving the quarter away. I'm hanging on to the quarter. Quarter is cool. And the quarter, like I said, it's been 47 years taped to the inside of the air cleaner on the Cadillac because it was the perfect size for adjusting that. And, you know, that's how it works. So I'm honored that he sent it to me, and I will include it in the display. It'll be back there, and once in a while, someone's going to say, hey, what's with that quarter? Why is it back there? And I'll refer them to this video and say, that was sent to me by Dylan because it was one of the adjusters in his Cadillac that he drives day to day while he is in Wyoming, living in this great country of ours. So that's this week's mailbag. I won't necessarily do these week to week, but whenever I get a bunch of cool mail, I will. Questions or comments, put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.